Welcome to the Wampa's Lair podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, have been frozen upside down to the cave ceiling with nothing to do but talk all things Star Wars. So make yourselves comfortable, but keep a wary eye out for trouble here in the Wampa's Lair.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This is episode number 130. Misa back. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me we have, of course, the Captain Tarples to my Jar Jar Binks. We have Carl LeClaire.
No, again, Jason. You're still going to the bosses. You're in big doo-doo this time.
Aww.
thanks for making me Captain Tarples. I love Captain Tarples. He took down Grievous, which is pretty sweet.
So, yes.
But Jason, we're not alone tonight.
No.
We are joined by a wonderful man all the way from the land of France. That's a whole other country.
And, yes.
Sorry, that sounded really patronizing. But we have an incredible Star Wars artist with us tonight, an actual real Star Wars artist, not Joe Hogan. And he had a table at Celebration. He is the one, he is the only, he's the infamous Chris D. Hey, Chris, what's up, buddy?
Yeah. Hey, guys. How's everybody doing tonight?
Oh, super, since you're here.
Oh. Yes.
Yeah, I gave you some nickel.
We're so happy to see you.
I wanted to give you some Nickelback loving.
Oh, yeah, man, I love you for it. Nickelback all the way, man.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Chris, we're so happy you're finally on, man. We've been wanting to get you on for so long, but you've been so busy selling art prints at Celebration that we had to wait.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry about that. Man's got to do what man's got to do, right?
How did it go for you at Celebration?
Actually, it went a lot better than I thought. It was my first Celebration. It was my first convention ever, you know, so I had no idea what to expect. I thought, okay, you go there, you're happy when you sell, like, 10 prints, when people don't walk by and just give you funny looks. And actually, it went phenomenal, you know. It was amazing. I met amazing people. You guys stopped by, I think, once or twice.
Oh, quite a few times.
Yeah, asking for directions. Where can I find the actual artist?
Right. Help me? Yeah, because we saw Joe Hogan sitting at the table with you, and we're like, this is clearly just a fake table, so.
Oh, yeah, that guy, yeah, the strange little man that were.
I know it.
Was stealing one of the chairs, man. I didn't want to be rude, but he was really, was something.
Chris, what was the title of your print again?
That was Heroes of the 501st.
That's right. And it was, dude, your artwork is awesome. Like, you have such a realism to your artwork. I love what you do.
Oh, thank you, man. I love you. I love what you guys do. I mean, wow. It is so regular, you know?
Well, thanks, man.
Thank you.
It's a lot easier than actually drawing a picture, though, because we just get to talk. That's easy.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But seriously, man, your print was, it just looked sick. I mean, you did such a great job.
I've actually got a copy of it on my wall, and I'm looking at it as we speak.
Oh, so, my God. I'm sending you epic vibes through it right now. I hope you're feeling it, man.
Oh, it's wonderful.
It's a portal to your soul.
So what was that experience like for you, though, Chris? I mean, you didn't really get a chance to probably experience a lot of the convention because you were kind of tied to your table for a lot of the weekend.
Oh, yeah. That was my thought exactly. At the beginning, you know, the first days, it was it was exciting, but it was kind of sad seeing all your friends who got to walk around, who got to meet everybody, who got to see all the awesome stuff, test all the games, see the trailers and whatnot, you know. I was stuck at a table selling paper to people, you know. But when I finally got to leave for an hour, and when Joe sent me on my way to take a walk, I just wanted to get back to my table because there were so many people. It was scary at some point. You know, it was how many were there? Like 150,000. That was too much, man. You know, I had my little lair of my own. You know, where I could just retreat. I had a chair to sit on. 140,000 other people didn't have that luxury. You know, so yeah. And yeah, in the end, I got to see Mark Hamill, and then everything was okay. You know. My celebration was made.
Nice.
That must have been such a cool experience, though. The fact that you were a licensed artist by Lucasfilm. I mean, that's such an accomplishment, dude.
Oh yeah, man. I was so excited. I'm so happy to be there with all the veterans. You know, like all these people who are in business for like 10 years already, who I looked up to when I started out. It was crazy just being next to them. You know, absolutely magnificent.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we've got a fun topic tonight, but before we get into that, we've got a poll, don't we, Carl, that we need to finally get to.
I know, we really do. Yeah, last time we recorded, we didn't get a chance to go and get into it because we wanted to give people a little bit more time, and I had listened to the whole Return of the Jedi soundtrack just in excitement for the poll. And that was exactly what the poll is. What was your favorite song off of the Return of the Jedi soundtrack? And it looks like we've got quite a varying degree of responses. So, Jason, you want to go through that for us?
Yes. The amount of responses is quite long. I think I've got basically the entire soundtrack written on my my paper here. But we've got a couple of options here that only got one vote each. We've got The Emperor's Arrival, Death of Yoda, Obi-Wan's Revelation, that big long track, the Sail Barge Assault. Somebody said that they wanted the music from Jabba's Sail Barge that was playing that isn't actually on the soundtrack. Jabba's theme was one of them. The Parade of the Ewoks, Lopty Neck, and Luke and Leia's theme each got one vote. And that was Luke and Leia's theme was yours, wasn't it, Carl?
It sure was. I love that song. Can't believe it didn't get more love. Come on, guys. it's just so beautiful to me. I remember, Jason, when we first did one of our like music episodes, like we did like our top five songs from the soundtracks in general. Mm-hmm. All my songs, for the most part, are kind of the more slow, sappier songs. I remember Chris Smith giving me a hard time for it. He was like, dude, why don't you like the more like action-based stuff? But it's like, dude, let me love what I love. I love Luke and Leia. I think it's probably my second or third favorite song in all of Star Wars. It's so beautiful. It captures this very beautiful, innocent relationship that they've clearly formed now. And you know, and there's hints of the Force theme in it too. So, I mean, it's very iconic for the two of them. And I remember like hearing that song as a kid, it always brought me a feeling of comfort, and it still brings me that same feeling to this day. I love when that song comes on, when I have the soundtrack on shuffle, it just mellows me right out, and I just feel lost in it. It's a beautiful piece, so that's why I picked it. But I'm gonna let you get on because I'm just a one vote man. So,
well, we had a couple of tracks get two votes. We have the Victory Celebration, Leia's News, and Light of the Force, and then the Battle of Endor 1, or the Into the Trap track that really kicks off the whole end battle. And that was where my vote went, just simply because that opening part of it with the drums and the trumpet, it's very it ramps up all the energy and excitement, and it really kicks things off right there as the fleet comes out of hyperspace, and Han and the rest of the rebels are getting trapped inside the shield generator bunker there. So that was my pick. But our first place vote had 8 votes. So there was a lot of different things that got votes, but this one was consistently a high vote getter, and that was Battle of Endor 2, or the track that has the chorus where Luke and Vader are fighting.
Right.
And Chris, you picked that, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. It's just such an epic song, man. Every time you hear it, it's just giving you goosebumps. shot.
Oh, yes.
It is. I mean, it's the first time Star Wars ever used a choir. And it's so haunting, right?
Yeah. It's really interesting because
guys,
it's a very...
You guys can hear that I'm playing it, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I was.
I wanted to make sure my mixer wasn't broken. I was so worried.
No, we're just sitting there listening to it, Carl.
So.
But it's really interesting because it's a very intense duel there, and they really just sort of slow down the music because we've had this very, you know, whole bunch of very upbeat, you know, up tempo, you know, bombastic style music for a lot of the battle, and yet for this very intense moment they slow it down, and it's almost like, you know, a very, you know, it's a very haunting piece, you know, rather than a, you know, bombastic, you know, duel to fate style lightsaber duel.
Yeah, I mean, there's more of a personal character to it, I think. You know, again, you know, the Duel of the Fates is so cool. It's epic. It's exhilarating. It's fast-paced. But, you know, none of these characters really know each other. There's no relational other than you're my enemy type of a thing. Whereas with this theme from Return of the Jedi, you know, it's a father and a son who is on the brink of breaking into becoming what his father, you know, was. And, it, you know, it's just, it soars to that emotional level that to me takes a further depth than something like Duel of Fates. And again, that's not to knock Duel of Fates. It's a fantastic song, but very different elements. And again, shows the artistry of John Williams. So.
Yes. Good pick, everybody.
Yeah. I'm not surprised that was number one. It's such a fantastic song.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, we've got a rather different topic today, Carl.
Yes, we do. Thanks to you and Chris.
Yes. What are we talking about today?
Jar Jar Binks.
Don't sound so excited.
No, I'm kidding. I love Jar Jar Binks.
Of course you do. Yeah.
So, yeah, today we are doing our top five Jar Jar moments, and this is not my idea.
Oh, that voice just gets you.
I love it.
I know.
I do too. And this topic wasn't my doing. Chris wanted to do this topic. Any particular reason why, Chris?
Yeah, of course. Jar Jar constantly gets so much hate, you know, it's time somebody stands up for him, you know, and finally defends the guy. I mean, Jesus. No, it's a very, you know, we always talk about Jedi standing up for the weak, you know, and all we do is hammering on the poor Jar Jar, man, and nobody's standing up for him. That makes all of you Sith and Imperial scum, you know. I'm a freaking Jedi right now here, right? And Jason, of course, right? We're freaking Jedi, and we're fighting the evil anti-Jar Jar-hating Empire here, right?
I love it. I love it. Yeah, I agree. Jar Jar needs some loving out there, so this episode is supposed to help with that. But yeah, so we're going to do our top five Jar Jar Binks moments. And
like I told you, Jason, I went to that really awesome panel at Celebration on like the power of myth and the, you know, hero's journey thing. And I told you afterwards, I was like, you would have loved this because one of the hosts, all he did was talk about why Jar Jar is actually one of the greatest characters in Star Wars. and while I still do this, I don't know that I fully agree with him, just because I think Jar Jar could have been executed a little bit better. But he makes a great point about the fact that Jar Jar is supposed to annoy you. And he's like that annoying person in your life that's kind of always there. But the thing is are you able to respond generously to that? Like Qui-Gon does. Qui-Gon is the perfect response to Jar Jar because he accepts the fact that even somebody this annoying has value. Whereas most of us, when we encounter somebody kind of annoying or, you know, a little bit of a klutz or a little bit immature, we immediately write them off as not important. And you know, they were making, this is not my point, by the way, I don't remember exactly who made it, but it was a really good point about the fact that Jar Jar actually, he's a challenging character to us in our everyday lives of how do we respond to annoyances? Do we just see them pathetic and useless, or are we capable of seeing value even in the most annoying of people? So I thought that was a really good point.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess I don't know what it says about me, but I never found him annoying. I always thought he was amazing and wonderful and funny, and I guess I'm just a weird person. but we already knew that.
No, not at all. There's a lot of people that love him. So he I mean, especially the, you know, when kids saw Jar Jar Binks when they first saw Phantom Menace, they fell in love with that character.
Oh, yes.
Because for a kid, he's super identifiable. He's clumsy. He's kind of silly and doofusy. Kids identify with that. I was old enough at the time where I didn't hate his character. I was just like, this is weird. But, you know, to this day, I still don't. I mean, I hated him for a while, but now, especially after doing 3 years of a podcast with Jason, you know, you learn to tolerate, if not like, the character.
Good. All right. Well, why don't we get to our lists? How are we going to do this roundtable, Carl?
I'm gonna let you start.
Okay. All right.
And then we'll do Chris.
Yes.
And I'm rounding this out.
Okay. All right. My number five Jar Jar moment comes from Attack of the Clones, and it's towards the beginning of Attack of the Clones where Jar Jar greets Obi-Wan and Anakin. Arby, Misa, so smiling to seeing you, sir. And the reason why I like this scene is because it just shows, you know, what a genuine character Jar Jar is, and that he really does, you know, care and remember and love his friends. And he's one of the least pretentious characters in all of Star Wars, because he's, you know, very down to earth. And what you see is what you get with Jar Jar. And he's obviously very, very happy to finally see these people that he, you know, went through a very life-changing situation with 10 years prior. So just the, you know, having that friend that you haven't seen in forever and you guys, you know, just sort of pick up right where you left off was always kind of cool. It's always kind of a cool situation. And it's interesting because Anakin sort of feels similar because he kind of confides with Jar Jar about his, you know, slight annoyance that, you know, Padme doesn't, you know, barely looked at him. You know, he confides in Jar Jar, you know, that thing. So, but yeah, that scene is as of today, my number five. So,
you know, I was thinking about getting like clips for tonight, and I was like, nah, Jason will be able to handle them all. Yeah, I don't have anything to say about that. Chris, what was your first moment that you love about Jar Jar?
Okay, this will be a lot less deep than what Jason just talked about. But yeah, my number five would be in episode one when they fight the droids on the plains of Naboo, when he just steps into a broken droid, and the droid starts shooting as he dances to let the thing go of him. You know, I don't know if you remember it. Like he has his foot stuck in the cables of the droid, and he doesn't even pay attention what happens around him. He just forgets what happens, that there's a freaking battle there, and like everybody's dying around him, and he's just worried about this thing on his foot. You know, and he doesn't even notice that he's shooting all the bad guys. I mean, when I was a kid, that cracked me up. I mean, I was dying of laughter there, man. That was a funny scene. I still enjoy the moment. I mean, makes me relive a lot of childhood memories, you know. Not that I ever stepped in a droid when I was a kid and stuff like that, but it was just one of these moments that I loved about him. Like I said, that's not an especially deep one, but I just liked it.
Yeah, no, that's
Jar Jar Binks. He's meant to be the fun character. I mean, it makes sense to have something like that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if I can just add something, I mean, it's like, in my opinion, there were always two comic relief characters per movie, at least one for the kids and one for the adults. In episode one, it was obviously Jar Jar stepping into poo, doing all kinds of stuff that it's just, that no adult would ever care about. And the other one was, I guess, Obi-Wan Kenobi with his sort of, oh, yeah, Master, the negotiations were short. You know. But yeah, that was just typical Jar Jar humor for me. I loved it. I mean, it was for the kids. So, yeah.
I actually, when I was a kid, I really liked that too, because as soon as he notices what it's doing, he uses it though, right? He does. He actually does use it. He like, you know, he's like, woohoo, hee hee. Like, because he's actually contributing to the battle right there.
Yeah, so, sort of, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
yeah, that moment almost made my list, so I do like it a lot. So,
yeah, but moments like that again show that a character who, to me, the main theme of Jar Jar Binks as a character is simply he is somebody that you expect to literally be useless, who oftentimes, even in the midst of his mistakes, actually helps out quite a bit. And I think that's a theme people like in Star Wars. Is when the unlikely characters become very influential and become important.
Yes.
So anyway,
what's your number five, Carl?
My number five is when Jar Jar's freaking out in the in their little trip through the planet core in Naboo, and he's like, "What? Not in trouble yet?
Oh,
you know
what yet? Monsters out there leaking in here, or sinking to no power? When are you thinking we're in trouble?"
I was back.
Monsters back.
Yes.
I like the scene because I love how anxious Jar Jar is. A lot like C-3PO in his high anxiety.
Oh yes.
He's so stressed in this situation, and to me that's very relatable, at least for me. Like sometimes when I'm in like crappy situations, my immediate response is never to like Qui-Gon's like, "Don't worry, we're not in trouble yet." But I'm like Jar Jar. I was like, "What are you talking about? This program just totally failed. There's nobody here. This sucks." Ah, and I just start freaking out. and I think that's very relatable of like just when things look grim, you immediately just overreact to it. Because, if you're kind of an anxious person, it's easy to overreact in like any little situation like that. And that's kind of how I interpret Jar Jar. He's very anxious here and he's just not capable of seeing beyond the immediate like horribleness of it. So, which again, it's very juvenile, and Jar Jar is. He's meant to be kind of a young character. You know, younger people, kids, you know, they have a hard time when something goes bad. To them, everything is bad. It takes years of maturation to see that things will get better. And Jar Jar in that moment is just like freaking out. And I find that really funny.
Awesome. Well, my number four comes from the Clone Wars. This is from season one of the Clone Wars, the episode Bomb Bad Jedi. And basically my thing is Jar Jar is a Jedi, and he takes what we are led to believe is Anakin's forgotten robe from Padme's ship. And he disguises himself as a Jedi to try and rescue Padme. And just the case of mistaken identity that comes with that sets up some pretty funny and humorous notions later on in the episode, because the battle droids are talking about, you know, there's a Jedi on the loose, and Padme's like, "Let's go find the Jedi and get out of here." And C-3PO's like, "I'm afraid Jar Jar is the Jedi," or whatever. I don't remember the exact line, but, you know, it was one of those funny things where I don't know where I was going with that. I totally lost my train of thought. But anyways, yes, that episode with Jar Jar as a Jedi always cracked me up. And I almost wish that he had had a lightsaber just to see what would have happened. Although he probably would have like cut off his ear or something.
Yep.
but yep, that's my number four.
Good. For the most part, I can't stand Jar Jar in the Clone Wars, so... he's over the top annoying in Clone Wars for me. That's again my opinion. I don't really have anything to say to that except yay. What about you, Chris? What's another one for you?
It's the moment in episode two when he finds Obi-Wan and Anakin again, and he goes all Obi, you know. Jason's number five. I guess he explained it pretty well, so I don't have anything to add about it, except that I absolutely adore that moment, and every time I see Hogan, I use it a lot, so.
I love that the two of you, like, pound him with this. It's great.
Hogan! Mies are so smiling to see in your son.
Yes. It's wonderful. He's very quotable, Jar Jar is.
He is.
But anyways, what's your number four, Carl?
mine is, again, from Phantom Menace. When he's talking to Queen Amidala, you know, in Palpatine's apartment there on Coruscant, and she's, you know, all bummed out about the people, and Jar Jar says, you know, you think the Gungans will be pasted too? I hope not. And then what does he say, Jason?
Oh, Risa no dying without a fight. Risa warriors. Risa got a grand army. That's why you no liking us, Risa thinks.
Exactly. I love it because I like that because it shows Jar Jar's pride for his race. You know, he's proud of being a Gungan. He's proud of what they are. They're a warrior culture. Not like Sparta warrior, but like he recognizes the fact that they have an army, that they, you know, they fight for their life. They fight for what they believe in. And Jar Jar takes pride in that. And when he says, you know, we used to have a grand army, he like pounds his chest a little bit in that scene. And I like that. I think, again, he's taking pride in where he comes from. And I like that. I like that Jar Jar, even though he's been ousted by this community, he still takes pride in that community. And that pride that he has in their army is what kind of inspires Amidala to go home and realizes, wow, we should work with them. So Jar Jar kind of inspires her in this unlikely way just by showing his pride for where he comes from. And I thought that was really cool.
Nice. I'm going to save my thoughts on that for later.
Okay. You want to ring us in with your number three then?
Okay. My number three is also from the Clone Wars. The Clone Wars, in my opinion, has a lot of great Jar Jar moments. And this is, I believe it's season four from the episode Shadow Warrior, where Jar Jar has a meeting with General Grievous. He is disguised as the current Gungan boss, and he is meets Grievous on a ship. And Grievous is trying to lure the Gungans into joining with the Separatists to fight against the Naboo. And so he's, you know, threatening the Naboo and trying to stir up trouble with, you know, there on the planet. And the camera cuts back to Jar Jar, and he's fiddling with the adjustable level of the chair. And he's, you know, messing with it, and he sort of just looks at Grievous for a second, and then the chair just starts to slowly sink back down. and it's one of the funniest comedic moments, to me anyways, in the Clone Wars. The comedic timing with it is great. And just in general, that episode is one of my favorite, you know, Jar Jar moments, but that moment in particular on board the Separatist ship where he's stalling Grievous. So,
yeah, I remember that. That's fine.
We're sorry, Carl. No, it's gonna be all right.
I don't care. I feel like if I have something to say, I'll say it, but I don't. You know, yeah, that's a good one. what do you got for us next, Chris?
Well, it's definitely the it's in episode three when he's granting the emergency. Is it emergency powers? Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes. I think it's emergency.
Yes, but that's in episode two.
It says okay. Well, in episode two, when he's granting the emergency powers to the Chancellor. I absolutely like that moment because, well, obviously he has been a relatively useless character in the story. And then when he finally thinks that he can grasp his chance to become useful and giving the Chancellor the emergency powers, actually he's making things worse, obviously, because we all know what happens after this, right? But when we first saw episode two, we were like, oh my God, Jar Jar's grown up, you know? Holy crap. And he thought, the dilemma about it is he thought he was very useful. He was saving the Republic. He was doing everybody a favor, but absolutely not. He just doomed the freaking universe to slavery. Good job, Jar Jar, you know? And this scene made me think a lot because I always thought about after he found out what happened, what he did, what he was responsible for, sort of, what did he think you know, what was going on in his head. And yeah, we obviously never found out about that. So that's actually a very interesting Jar Jar moment. Maybe we'll find out in episode 7. I cross my fingers, but that's, yeah.
don't hold your breath, Chris.
Oh, man. I'll settle for a comic or a novel about that.
I'll settle for a Clone Wars resolution 3-page vignette on that. That is a good scene though, Chris. You know, you make a good point of how he's trying to make a difference, and unfortunately, it's not a very good one. But I think again, this shows. It reminds us that Jar Jar is still, he's very inexperienced, he's very naive, but his desire to do good, which is consistent for Jar Jar in the movies. He is always trying to do good. That's taken advantage of. And that's the sad thing. Palpatine knows, he and Masameta know exactly what they're doing when they hint at that, you know, in the Chancellor's room there. You know, they're hinting at the fact that, oh, if only Amidala was here, and Jar Jar knows he's in her stead. So he's trying to step up and do what he thinks is right, but he's just being played by evil people. So which is a sad plight of the reality of life. Oftentimes good people get taken advantage of by bad people. So,
good point.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a sad moment, but you know, it is one of those moments where, you know, the end result of Jar Jar's actions, you know, end up being not quite what we had hoped would happen, but it is a moment for him to grow up because he's standing there in front of the entire Senate of the Galactic Republic, you know, putting a motion forward. And it's probably, you know, the first time he's actually done something like that, because he's always been, you know, the Padme's aide. So it is a big growing up and, you know, maturing moment for Jar Jar. Although he is nervous, as you can tell, because at the beginning he, you know, he says, "Senators, Dello Felegates." In response to, yes, he Dello Felegates instead of fellow delegates. But I mean, I think anybody would be nervous to their first time, you know, putting a motion to the Senate floor, and it's something this big. sure. But anyway, yes, that's a good moment. So
good call, Joe. Or wow, good call, Chris. Ah.
Wow.
Oh, thank you.
That was such a good Joe Hogan.
I tried.
Oh, thank you.
Oh my yeah.
God. Yeah. I'm Joe Hogan and I'm no Chris D. No, yeah. Oh, man. Nice. Anyway.
what's your number three, Carl?
It's probably the scene when he kind of tells his story to Padme while she's cleaning R2. Misa Jar Jar Binks, you're a Gungan, aren't you? How'd you end up here with us?
My no. Misa day starting pity okey day with the brisky morning munchin, then boom! Getting very scared and grabbing that Jedi, and pow! Misa here. Misa getting very, very scared.
Crunch berries. so... I think I really like this because it's kind of a cute little interaction between he and Padme. But what I also like is it's Jar Jar is kind of reflecting to us how in the midst of your ordinary everyday occurrences, something extraordinary can happen. And all of a sudden you're swept up into something like awesome and exciting and somewhat terrifying. So I really like that. I like Jar Jar's just really honest childlike response to that question of like, I don't know, I was just doing my thing and all of a sudden I'm here, you know. And I like that. I like that theme of how the extraordinary can show up in the ordinary. You know, it's like falling in love out of nowhere. All of a sudden you're just doing your thing and then boom, you're in love. And you see it coming. So I like that. I think that's, in a sense, that's Jar Jar's falling in love moment, if you will. So, because he gets wrapped up into something bigger than himself, but he surrenders to it, which is very childlike as well, in a good way. So I really like the way he interprets the events of his life to Padme, because it's honest and it's adorable. So,
yes,
not as adorable as Daisy Ridley. Hello, Mr. Abrams.
Hello, Mr. Abrams.
Marry me.
Down boy.
Can't help it. You know, Christy doesn't. Like, you remember who Daisy Ridley is, right?
Oh, no, no, absolutely not, dude. No, what's Star Wars? I don't know. No, of course I know who she is. I just have trouble remembering the name of her character. Was it like... Rey. Rey. Yeah. There we go. We're not used to simple names anymore. It's always Obi-Wan, Kenobi, Qui-Gon, Jinn, and...
Yeah.
No.
Rey.
No, it's Finn and Rey. Hello. No.
Yeah. So... Yeah, she's wonderful. Anyway, sorry, I sidetracked us. Can you imagine that, Jason? Hello, Mr. Abrams.
Hello, Mr. Abrams. There, that's for you, Carl.
But getting back onto topic.
Yes, number two for Jar Jar.
Yes, my number two Jar Jar moment comes from the Clone Wars Lost Missions episodes with Jar Jar and Mace Windu. And first of all, those are two, you know, really fun episodes to watch just in general. But the moment I'm thinking of in particular is they are looking for Queen Julia. They've landed on this at the spaceport, and Jar Jar is frantic trying to get out and go look for her. And Mace Windu's like, "No, calm yourself. Let's figure out what we're doing here first." And he starts reaching out in the Force, and he's like, "I see streets, markets, people," and Jar Jar sitting in the co-pilot seat and rolls his eyes and goes, "Yep, Mace can see that from here." and just the fact that in this instance, Jar Jar is the straight man to something Mace Windu says, and the timing in that episode, again, the comedic timing that they worked out with Jar Jar in the Clone Wars, I thought was ended up becoming, especially towards the end, very, very good. And that might be the funniest moment to me of the entire Clone Wars. Especially, you know, the first time I saw it, I cracked up so hard. I had to pause the episode and rewind it a bit to catch the rest of the dialogue that I missed from, you know, snorting. I was laughing so hard. But yes, I'm also very easily amused. So, but no, that was one of my favorite scenes from the Clone Wars. So that's why it's my number two.
I'm going to reserve comment.
Oh, Chris, what about you?
Oh, my number four. It's from episode one again. It's during the battle of Naboo, like the battle at the plains. You have Captain Tarples and Jar Jar, and yeah, Jar Jar is on the top of a tank, obviously, because of course, you know. And Tarples is running up to him to help him out, and he's like, "Oh, Jar Jar, you said a boomer," and.
Jar Jar doesn't have a boomer.
Okay, that moment is great, but it actually has a story to it. It recently became one of my favorite moments because one of the artists at the celebration, Scott Harbin, he showed us an illustration of a Jar Jar he did, of his version of Jar Jar, and it was like beefed up Jar Jar looking all angry and stuff, you know, and his version of Jar Jar was, he was an outcast because he killed too many people, you know, he was a badass. It was like Drax the Destroyer in Guardians of the Galaxy, you know. And we were just joking the entire evening about, like, what Jar Jar could say instead, like, in that case. "We so don't need no boomer," you know. "We so freaking kill you, so now." It's just... Yeah, it's just because of that, you know, another interpretation. And every time when I watched that moment last week, it just, what Jason said, I couldn't breathe anymore, you know. It was just so funny, you know.
it's always great when you've got a story to go with these things, and that's a good one.
And it was a funny, in itself, it was a funny moment in the movie. I mean, of course he screwed up again, but somehow he did good again. He somehow was useful again. Now, God knows why, you know.
Right. Oh, man.
Yeah, if I had an honorable mention, that probably would have been it. Because I always remember when I first saw the movie when I was a kid, my younger brother thought that part was hilarious. So he used to like say it to me all the time, just like around the house. He'd be like, "Well, Misa no have a Boomba." So yeah, that's an endearing moment for me too. I still enjoy that.
Awesome. Well, what's your number two, Carl?
Same as yours. yeah, I love that. I did. That is the one time when I literally laughed out loud at Jar Jar. You know, there's been other things like when he gets farted in his face. Oh, Piusa. Like, that's
Piusa.
Yeah, that was like silly to me as a kid. I don't think I necessarily laughed really hard, but I thought it was funny because I love a good fart joke. I was cracking up. Yeah, Misa see that too, you know, or for the same things you said. I mean, he's the straight man to Mace. And I mean, it's just a funny the interaction between them anyway, because Mace Windu is always so serious. And then you've got Jar Jar, who's the exact opposite of that. So that's a really funny scene. And I like it, too, because, you know, the Jedi are always so serious, and especially Mace Windu, I mean, who's kind of a symbol of the Jedi Order. You know, they take things so seriously, and, you know, they're so tuned into the Force that it's like, yeah, you know, you don't always necessarily... Sometimes just the natural ability for perception comes in handy, too, you know? You know, it's just... It's kind of like Jar Jar just basically saying, yeah, I see the same damn thing, you know? So, which I just thought that, you know, that's really funny. So, I enjoy Jar Jar in those two episodes for sure of the Clone Wars, but that's probably the only ones. But I love that episode. It's great.
Nice.
So
awesome. I guess we're down to our number one.
We are. Favorite Jar Jar moments, everybody.
And my list could probably change, you know, tomorrow. Today, my number one Jar Jar moment is one that you already brought up, Carl, and that's when Jar Jar talks to Queen Amidala on Coruscant.
Oh.
And it's interesting because, you know, here he is, a Gungan outcast, and he's got, you know, the courage to go up and try and comfort the queen of the planet that he happens to live on. You know, she's obviously distressed about what's going on with the Senate and with her people. And she, you know, she's got a quiet moment where she's just, you know, thinking about all that stuff. And he goes up and out of his way to try and comfort her in that situation. You know, Yusa Tinkin, Yusa people gonna die? And he's a very, you know, caring person, Gungan. You know, and then, of course, his whole discussion, like you were saying, Carl, about, you know, how the Gungans are warriors and they don't die without a fight, sort of sparks in Padme the whole idea of going back to freeing Naboo in the first place. So... in a sense, Jar Jar is kind of responsible for them going back. You know, I may be stretching that slightly, but I don't know. I really like that scene.
I think she wants to go back, and it, maybe in that moment she's trying to figure out how can I do this effectively, and then he gives her the concrete solution.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I would agree. But it's just one of those interesting things because he's such a slapstick type of character. And don't get me wrong, I'm a fan of Charlie Chaplin. I love a good slapstick character. But it's in this moment where he actually has a very tender and, you know, caring and, you know, almost serious moment. And just the fact that that character is able to do that and Jar Jar is able to do that, at least at this point, puts that scene as my number one Jar Jar moment in Star Wars. So
that really shocks me, Jason, but I love it. That is a good one.
Thank you. Thank you. What about you, Chris? What's your last one?
Okay, my number one is from The Clone Wars, finally. It's from the Lost Missions arc when he's with Mace Windu, but it's not because of the same reason. I absolutely enjoy that moment when he's like, "Oh yeah, I see that too." We're probably my honorable mention, but there's one sentence that like drove me crazy during these episodes, and that was when he was calling Mace, always like, "Mastering Mace," you know? And he was saying it over and over again, and you saw just how pissed Mace Windu was getting. Like, he's one of those Jedi who's never showing any emotion. Like Sam Jackson, in every movie, every moment you see him, he always looks the same. He always has the same mood. He always looks grumpy. He's always the same, you know. And there, Jar Jar finally brings out something else in him. He brings out like you finally see Mace freaking Windu losing his patience. He's like, "Oh my god, I'd rather be somewhere else, you know. I'd rather just leave that guy here, you know." And that moment just perfectly summarizes Jar Jar for me and his ability not to give, not to. I'm not sure if he just doesn't give a damn about authority or if he just doesn't realize it. I mean, like you mentioned, he talks to the queen of the entire planet he used to live on, and he's just like, "Hey, what's up?" You know, or he goes to the leader of his people, and he's like, "Hey, boss, yeah, how was the thing I broke?" You know, and the head of the Jedi Council, and he's just like, "Oh, mastering Mace, yeah, whatever, I can see that too." You know, yeah. That's just amazing, and this mastering Mace, it just stuck with me. Yeah. Mastering Mace. It's perfect.
That's awesome. That's awesome, because Mace Windu is totally somebody that, you know, it's Master Windu or, you know, Mr. Windu if he was not a Jedi.
The,
you know,
Windu.
Yes. You wouldn't call him Mace. You know, that's only his mother calls him that. you know, sort of thing. And Jar Jar, apparently, much to Mace Windu's chagrin. But yeah, no, that's funny.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, because the first name is it's a very informal sign of camaraderie, and Mace Windu probably doesn't consider Jar Jar a good buddy.
No.
So that's great. No. Yeah, I really like that too. Master and Mace.
Master and Mace, and it's just, you know, all over the place. He's, you know, yelling it, and you know, everybody can hear it. Mace Windu's just like, "Oh, stop it." Nice. I love it. I love it. What about you, Carl? What's your number one Jar Jar moment?
This is the one thing about Jar Jar Binks I have always loved and I will forever love. And it's really, there's no reason behind other than that. I just like the way it sounds. I love when he says, "Whoa, Yusa guy's bomb bad."
Oh, Yusa guy's bomb bad.
I just love that. I love that line. And it's just, actually, yeah, that did make me chuckle as a kid. I always found that kind of silly. And, you know, it's so funny because, you know, when we first meet Jar Jar, he's, you know, he's running, he's in hysterics. We've seen him freak out under the water. Like, he's just been, you know, kind of just freaking out all the time. And now we see him, you know, respond to these like epic warriors and just, "Oh, you guys are badass," is basically all he says.
Yeah.
So I don't really have a fleshed out reason as to why I like this so much. It's just my favorite Jar Jar moment. Whenever I'm watching Phantom Menace, I just love it. Use the guy's bomb bad, you know?
It is basically the Gungan version of BA. So yeah,
exactly. So I love it. That'll always be my favorite moment with Jar Jar.
Nice. Nice. It's a fun line to say.
It is.
"Oh, use the guy's bomb bad."
But yeah, you know, I did have fun preparing this, and this is coming from somebody who doesn't obviously really care for Jar Jar. I did have a lot of fun. I watched Phantom Menace today while I was doing my notes, and I was saying this to Jason before we started recording, and we'll get into this a little bit more at another time because don't have time for it today. But I would say if Phantom Menace had an older Anakin Skywalker character, so we didn't have Jake Lloyd in it. We had a kid who was at least 15, maybe 16 years old, so he's a little bit more relatable and a lot less annoying. Phantom Menace would probably be my favorite prequel movie, because there's just so much about Phantom Menace I really like. So, anyway, that's for another day. but I do, you know what I mean? I think it was fun to reflect on Jar Jar, and I really liked what I heard about Jar Jar at that panel at Celebration. I've come to tolerate and slightly enjoy Jar Jar in light of recording with you, Jason, for 3 years, but that panel really gave me a new way of looking at Jar Jar as a character. And I really appreciate that. Like, he is the annoying one. You should be annoyed, but how do you respond to that? You know, and I love that. I love that idea of how do you respond to these annoying outcasts. In a sense, to give it a Christian context for all those people that love this stuff, and for those of you who hate it, sorry. but it is, you know, it's really like Jar Jar is the outcast from society that's annoying to you. Like, for Christians, we have an obligation to care for the poor and the needy, which can sometimes be annoying to us because it's just like, well, I'm busy taking care of my own life. Like, I don't have time for that. And I think it's people like Qui-Gon who are selfless who kind of call us back to that and just say, no, there's value here too. They need your help too. And in a sense, Qui-Gon is like Jesus in the sense of he brings Jar Jar back from being an outcast. That's what Jesus was all about, was bringing the outcast back into society. So Jar Jar is really he's this outcasted character who's belittled and hated. And yet, even in light of all of that, he still has a jovial way of being and has purpose. And that's the challenge to us, I think, as Star Wars fans who hate Jar Jar, is we find it challenging to accept and find value and find purpose in something that's annoying and puts a burden on us. So he's a challenging character. And I really liked that lens to look at him through. So,
yeah. Well, I'm sure Chris would agree with me. I've never found him challenging or annoying. And so it's just awesome to finally be able to give Jar Jar some love in an episode like this. So,
yeah,
absolutely.
He deserves some. You know, he deserves some love. He's a Star Wars character, whether you like it or not. There's no getting rid of him. Nope. So, again, it's fine to, if you don't like him, just ignore him. But even if you don't like him, maybe at least see a different, like, look at him in a different way. Which might add a little bit more credibility to him as a character.
Do you have any final thoughts on Jar Jar, Chris?
No, actually, I just want to compliment you, Carl. That was pretty well said. So I've never thought about it that way. And you explained it pretty well. You're absolutely right.
Oh, thanks, Chris.
Cool.
But, you know, before we start wrapping up, I completely forgot to do this at the beginning, Chris, but I want to talk to you about Clone Wars Resolutions for a little bit here
Let
you go. Because, dude, it's you and Joe Hogan are really steering the ship. I mean, I know tons of people have contributed, and everybody has worked their butts off, from writers to artists. But you and Joe, for months now, this is all you guys have been doing. And tell me how it's going for you, man. Like, what's this like for you, putting out something of this quality? Because I'm loving Clone Wars Resolutions. I love your freaking artwork too, by the way.
Well, fuck you.
But how's it going for you? Give me a where you're at with this.
I'm actually working on it right now.
As I could hear you. Yeah.
It's first of all, it's mostly Joe that's steering the ship. I mean, he takes care of everybody. I mean, I'm just doing artwork, but he's taking care of all of the artists, and that's a lot of work, especially when not everybody gets done on time. He has to adjust deadlines and stuff. For me, for example, he just saved my life by giving me a larger deadline, you know, because I still have like 3 vignettes to finish, and that's. I was running out of time, and he just gave me more time. He played with some dates, and it just he's doing the heavy lifting, and he's carrying most of the project on his back. So I just want to say thanks to him at this point again for taking care of all of us. You know, he's making our life a lot easier. But for the project itself, I think I can speak for every one of the artists that it's a lot of pressure when you see that the first you guys have read the first issues that are out, right?
Yeah, yes. I didn't get today's yet. That's the only one I have yet to catch up.
Was Mace Windu, but the quality of these things is pretty intense. So there's a lot of pressure to keep up that quality and keep the people who read it happy. You know, of course. All of us would rather be done with it at this point because we were just working on this for more than 6 months. I mean, we started planning it a year ago, you know. So at this point, we just want to get it done. But the hard part is when you just try to keep up the amazing quality of everybody's work, and that's a lot of pressure, and pressure makes you tired, and when you're tired, yeah, you know the feeling, right? And just nobody wants to put out something bad to make the entire project lose in credibility or in value, because nobody wants to disappoint their buddies. You know, we were all in this ship when not everybody keeps everybody needs to keep the ship clean. You know, otherwise it'll sink with everybody on it, and nobody can swim. Obviously, we're artists.
So Chris, you're in the same style as Joe. You do a lot of digital art, right? Like you use a lot of like Photoshop to do your drawings in.
Oh yeah, man. It's just a faster work medium. You can put out an amazing quality in a shorter amount of time, because you don't need to wait for paint to dry. You can cheat a little here and there, you know. I don't want to give out too many of our secrets, you know, otherwise we all lose credibility.
Chris D becomes the Dave Prowse of the Clone Wars Resolutions. Tells you everything before it comes out.
It's just a really good medium to work in and to color in a little faster than, like I said, to mix paint or wait for paint to dry or scan stuff. You know, you just have it ready. When you're done, you're done. You save a JPEG and you're good, you know. You don't have to scan something, color adjust, contrast, adjust the contrast. You're just done. So digital art is amazing for that stuff. But yeah, if I had a choice, I would do it traditionally. I just love paint, but yeah. For another time.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of your style looks like it's painted, though. Almost like an acrylic oil type paint style to what you do, which I really think is neat. And it gives like Star Wars to me. I know you're not the only artist that does that, Chris, but I know you personally, so that makes you better. But it does. Oh, I'm Chris D. But it gives it this kind of really like timeless quality to it, if that makes sense. I mean, it's like, look, sometimes like some of the prints I've looked at of yours, Chris. I remember when I first met you over the summer when we were hanging out with Joe down in the city, and you were showing me some stuff on your phone. You have that one print you did of Dooku in his lair. Is he fighting somebody? I can't remember it completely.
No, actually, Dooku is just standing there.
That's
right. Just watching Ventress fight Obi-Wan.
Right.
Is that
yeah.
one?
Yeah. And it's such an awesome print. Like, I feel like that's something I'd see in an art museum. Like, there's just this beautiful quality to it that really captures your imagination. And what I like about that is it takes something, you know, to maybe the secular world of Star Wars is something, you know, something silly, and makes it artistic and beautiful, and that's what I really like about your style, Chris. There's a beauty to it. So I love what you do.
Thank you so much, man. It means a lot. That's also a thing I like about the project we do. Since there's 18 different artists, there's such a variety of styles. I mean, there's something for everybody. Everybody has such a different style, and it starts getting really interesting when two artists team up. I'm not sure if stuff has already been released where artists teamed up, but just as a quick example, I'm working on Joe on a vignette together, so I basically have his inks and I'm putting my colors in there, and it just makes an entirely new style. It's like his art and my art had a child. Beautiful child. That makes it exciting for us as well, you know, to team up with somebody else and see something new come to life, and that's beneficial for the readers, because this just never gets boring. Everything is completely different. There's definitely something for everybody. If you don't like today's vignette, you'll absolutely love tomorrow's vignette. Maybe discover a new favorite artist, you know. Yeah.
No, absolutely. I'm really enjoying it. I'm really excited about where they're going. The stories are great. You know, obviously, you know, that they've been, some of them have been contradicted by canon, but they're still a lot of fun, and they're really interesting, you know, ideas, almost like, you know, Tales style stories. And I really can't wait to see what it all looks like as one big whole at the end of it when we get to see it all together. You know, I'm really looking forward to seeing how, you know, not only the stories, but the art and everything flows from one to the next, you know, when it's all in one big, you know, big group
book.
There. But big book, yes. That's the word. but yeah, so I'm really enjoying it. Have you had any that have come out yet, or
actually no. I'm pretty much all at the end. I think I have, I don't want to say any, I think I have the last two or three, and one is coming out pretty soonish. That's Gregor, and then the Ryloth stories that I've been working on with Joe. Yeah, but most of my stuff will come at the very end, and I'm very thankful for the few extra days. So
awesome. Well, I can't wait to see what it looks like. So
yeah, me neither. Chris, before we start winding it down here, I have two questions for you to close it out.
All right.
Question number one, what's your favorite Star Wars movie?
Okay. It's, I'm going to make a lot of enemies here, but it's episode 2.
Wow.
Yeah. I will tell you where. Okay, all the cheesy Anakin Padme stuff. All right, it's cheesy and you have to sit through it. It's just part of the movies. I mean, it's just, we got to deal with it. It's just, it's there. It's like Jar Jar, man. If you don't like Jar Jar, just deal with it for like 20 minutes until he's gone, and then, you know. And people, in my opinion, they forget that there's an entire, that there's another, that after that, there's a movie, you know, there's other stuff going on. There's amazing scenes in that movie. For example, for me, the thing that made episode 2 my favorite Star Wars movie is just the arena battle. You know, the Jedi land, the clones land, everything's going to hell. It's like freaking, it's a Star Wars battle. You know, the battle on Naboo in episode 1 was pretty cool. You know, the droids shooting at the gigantic shield, that was cool. But there's a freaking Star War. There's the famous Clone Wars Obi-Wan was talking about, was talking about in episode 4, you know. You know, so, oh, the Clone Wars, oh, yeah. What the hell were the Clone Wars, you know? And, there you go, that were the Clone Wars. That's where they started, in that arena where you saw Jedi die for the first time, like, not just Qui-Gon, but, you know, just like hundreds of them. You just saw them die on screen, like, You for the first time you saw that these droids were really dangerous. You saw what they could do. You saw they could kill Jedi, and then came these badass clone troopers. And I love my clone troopers. I think you have noticed that by now. But they were finally there, and you saw what they could do. They were freaking badass. They looked cool. They were Boba Fett for me again. You know, it's Boba Fett's second chance. Boba Fett was back, and 1 million times, you know. And yeah, and yeah, okay, I didn't like Anakin in that one. I loved Obi-Wan. He was in his transition phase, like between Padawan and Master, you know. He didn't have this whole Master thing down yet, and it's amazing. Yeah. And yeah, nice. I would have said Empire Strikes Back, but I grew up with that movie. I saw it in a theater, so yeah, I'm gonna stick with my own time, so yeah.
That's fair, man. You know,
cool. You have no idea how happy that makes me. episode 2 is my favorite of the prequels, specifically for that arena battle. It's barely edged out by Return of the Jedi, though, just because you can't get closer to Star Wars perfection than that last act of Return of the Jedi, in my opinion. But that's the only reason Attack of the Clones doesn't top it out. So anyways, Carl, you had one more question you wanted to ask.
I do.
Chris,
first off, appreciate your love for Attack of the Clones, Chris. That's cool. but what is your favorite Star? Who is your favorite Star Wars character to draw, paint, whatever?
Yeah, can I say clones?
Yeah, that's what, yeah that, I think that's what I think. I thought that it was what it might be, but yeah, absolutely.
Okay, let's be very, very specific. Gregor, I love Gregor. Cool. He's the clone commando. For those who don't know, the clone commando in the Clone Wars season 5. I don't remember the episode, but he's that one clone commando that goes all rampage and goes with the tire explosion and really awesome. Nobody knows what happened to him, not yet, anyways. And yeah, he was just badass, and I love drawing him. He is my favorite video game come to life, made official. So yeah, there you go. It's Gregor. And otherwise, I would say let's say Lando, because he's awesome. What have we here?
I know that's like your favorite line. So,
oh yeah, it is.
nice.
And it's so suave coming from a smooth, sexy Frenchman like yourself.
So. Oh, oui.
Oh man,
whatever we hear.
Oh my gosh, that's great. That's great. Awesome.
Chris, do you have a matchup for us? Were you able to come up with something? Or you want me to come up? You got me to? Wow, let me try my words again. Do you have a matchup?
I have a suggestion, if like you don't mind. You might have done it already, but did you ever hear of Chuck Norris?
Yes.
Yeah. Don't worry. No, it won't be Chuck. Okay. But yeah, there was this whole debate online about Kyle Katarn and Starkiller being the Chuck Norrises of Star Wars. I think they deserve like
a showdown,
battle of an absolute showdown full of explosions, and yeah, put that Chuck myth to the test, you know, because yeah, Kyle Katarn, he's a freaking badass, obviously. And yeah, Starkiller, man, he killed stars, you know. It's freaking
it's in his name.
Yeah, but basically both of them were just so ridiculously powerful. I think it's just fair to have a matchup, and yeah,
it'll be done. I don't know if we've had that specific one before, Jason.
No,
but even if we have, I don't care. It's been a long time, so we're 130 episodes in. We're allowed to repeat. We have new listeners that might want to weigh in.
But we've never done this one. I would have remembered this one because this is cool.
Yeah,
this is a cool idea. So yes,
I love it.
Our next matchup for our next episode will be Kyle Katarn versus Starkiller, Galen Merrick, the Secret Apprentice, whatever name you want to call him, from The Force Unleashed. So if you want to respond to the matchup or send in a Larian inquiry or get in touch with us anyway, where can they do that, Carl?
Facebook, facebook.com/WampasLairPodcast. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/WampasLair, or email us at WampasLairPodcast@gmail.com.
Woohoo!
And before we go, real quick, we're going to be playing our next episode of the Star Wars radio drama tonight. Last time, we're up to episode 5 already, which is great. Moving right along. I love these radio dramas. So tonight's episode will be Jedi That Was, Jedi To Be. We're pretty much into the movies now. There's not a whole lot of new things. The only thing I'm going to mention quick about episode 4, if you were listening last time, you do see this funny little scene where R2 does fiddle with R5-D4 so as to cause the malfunction so that he gets taken in. But one thing that I noticed, and Jason, you'll appreciate this, while I was listening to the episode today from the radio drama that we had on our last episode, was how faithful, and again, this is in the movie too, but you really get this in this episode, of how faithful R2 is to completing this mission for Leia, finding Obi-Wan and getting those plans off to the Rebellion. I really like that, this one-track mind of R2 of just getting the job done. And he'll stop at nothing, even going against his programming to fiddle with other droids without human supervision. I thought that was funny. It gave me a new appreciation for R2, which I know you'd appreciate, Jason.
Oh, yes, because R2's the best.
Yes.
But, beep, boop, but yeah, beep. No.
Nice. So if you wanna you know, stick around again at the end of the episode tonight, we'll be playing episode 5, Jedi That Was, Jedi To Be. So Luke's about to encounter Obi-Wan. So
dun dun dun.
But but before we go, Chris, this is your chance, man. Tell people where they can find your art. I heard some people asking you at Celebration, which is awesome, if you do commissions, and I know that you do because I'm hitting you up as soon as you're done with Clone Wars Resolutions. Everybody else goes behind me. Remember that. I can't wait to get some Christie artwork in my hands that you do for me. I already have a sweet idea for you that I can't wait to talk to you about later on. But if people want to check you out, Chris, look at your artwork, commission you to do a piece, where can they do that?
Thank you, first of all. You can find me on my Facebook page. That will be facebook.com/ChrisDZign, like Chris D, like my name, and SIGN. That would be my Facebook page, or on my DeviantArt, which would be crispyd@deviantart.com. So, yeah.
Awesome. Check.
Come and say hi.
Yeah, please do, guys. He's incredible.
Indeed.
And Chris, thanks so much for coming on. I want to point out to everybody, if you're listening right now, it is about 2:30 in the morning, Chris's time right now in France. And he took the time to meet up with us tonight. We have somebody from Pacific time, Eastern time, and France time. And I've got it the easiest. So, I always appreciate Jason accommodating to me. And Chris, I really appreciate you accommodating to our schedule tonight.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I absolutely love your show, guys. It's cool to be a part of it. And I hope I haven't been talking too much or too French. I don't know, man. Like you said, I'm pretty tired, so.
Dude, I love having you on. I want to get you and Joe on at the same time sometime.
Oh, my God. So, for a matchup.
That would be like.
That's a perfect matchup to do. We're totally going to do that later.
Yes. We'll have a Chris D versus Joe Hogan.
Yeah. Everybody will vote for you because they hate Joe, so.
Anyway,
yeah, Chris, dude, thanks so much for coming on. Love your artwork, love what you're doing, and guys, seriously, read Clone Wars Resolutions if you're not. That's absolutely awesome. You can read it on the website. It just pops up in a window. If you just want to read it online, you can download it as a comic book reader file, so you can read it on your iPad or Kindle, or you can even download a PDF to read on your computer. There's so many options. They're doing awesome work. Check out Clone Wars Resolutions. Do yourself a favor and read it. It's awesome.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, anything else, Carl, before we wrap this up?
I don't think so, Jason.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This has been episode number 130. Risa back. Be sure to go ahead and leave us a rating or review on iTunes or wherever you find our podcast. We would greatly appreciate it. But until next time, for Carl and Chris, I'm Jason, and we will see you in the Wampa's Lair.
Misa back!
Star Wars, based on characters and situations created by George Lucas. Episode 5, Jedi That Was, Jedi To Be. A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, there came a time of revolution when rebels united to challenge a tyrannical empire. In the rebellion's most desperate crisis, the fate of the entire Rebel Alliance rested with the astro droid R2-D2, whose memory banks held secret plans critical to the struggle against the Empire. At the edge of the western Dune Sea on the desert planet of Tatooine is the moisture farm of Owen Lars. Here, R2-D2 and his interpreter counterpart C-3PO have been brought following their purchase by Owen and his young nephew, Luke Skywalker. Once again, R2 has escaped to deliver his message to the mysterious Obi-Wan Kenobi. Ignorant of his mission, Luke and C-3PO must try to recover him before he comes to harm in the hostile wasteland scorched by Tatooine's binary suns.
C-3PO, are you awake? It's dawn. 3PO!
Master Luke, is that you?
Shh! If my uncle finds out R2 got away, he'll skin me alive.
Oh, well, I am fully prepared, sir. I hooked myself up to the charging unit last night.
Good. I wish I hadn't banged up my skyhopper at Beggar's Canyon. It's going to be a lot tougher to track down R2 in the land speed.
Shall I activate the ground level door, sir?
No, no. I want to wake my uncle up. The main power's still shut down for the night. I don't dare turn it back on.
Oh, I see. The need for stealth.
Yeah, right. I'll raise the door manually. You push the speeder through. It'll float along pretty easily on this repulsor field.
Yes, sir.
Okay. The door's up just high enough. Come on, 3PO, push!
I must say, I agree with your precautions, sir. Your uncle seems rather, well, irascible.
3PO, my uncle hates spending money. He was against buying you and R2-D2 from the Jawas in the first place.
Oh.
Now, if he finds out that R2's run off, well, hop in.
Master Luke, if I might suggest, I could take the controls, leaving you free to scan the terrain for tracks. Piloting ground effect vehicles like your land speeder is one of my secondary functions.
Good idea. Let's go.
Whoa!
Careful, 3PO! You have to use a light touch on her!
Yes, sir, I see. This vehicle's steering response is excellent. I presume you maintain it yourself, sir.
That's right. I like to make sure things work right. The night winds probably blew away the marks of R2's treads, but I figure he's headed towards whatever he was looking for when you two got captured by those Jawas.
Our escape pod landed somewhere over that way. R2 seems obsessed with the area behind those mesas.
Maybe we can pick him up on the scanner. If you're right, he's headed straight for the Jundland Wastes.
I must say, Master Luke, this Tatooine does seem a desolate place. I simply cannot understand what drew R2 out here. He kept repeating that nonsense about his mission and secret plans, and this Obi-Wan Kenobi person.
Well, there's a Ben Kenobi that lives out this way. My uncle got awfully mad when I mentioned Ben's name at the dinner table last
night. There really is such a person.
Oh, yeah.
I presumed R2 was in a state of hallucinatory malfunction, sir. Completely addled.
No. Ben's real enough. I've seen him a few times. All the older settlers like my uncle think that Ben is some sort of magician. Listen, if you swing a little left, you'll see an opening in the Mesa wall.
You're very good, sir. Oh, yes, I see it on the scanner. If I might ask, sir, just what sort of an individual is this Obi-Wan Kenobi?
Well, he's real old, for one thing. He travels the Jundland Wastes and the Dune Seas on foot. There's nobody else that does that. He doesn't seem to need much from town, either. He's almost never been to Anchorhead.
And you have met him, sir?
Well, in a way. About 5 seasons ago. Still no sign of R2.
Sir, what is my best choice at this fork?
Left.
Thank you, sir.
It'll take us into the Wastes. My friend Wendy and I rode out this way on a dewback once.
Pardon me, sir, but that sounds rather rash.
Well, we wanted to get out on our own for a while.
Oh.
But we were bored. We wanted to let off a little steam.
I feared I wouldn't know anything about that, sir.
The dewback threw us off in one of the canyons and ran away. Got pretty bruised up, and then when it got dark, we still hadn't found our way out. Oh, it was kind of spooky. There were a lot of weird sounds, and then we heard a voice off to one side.
A voice?
And it called my name. It was Ben Kenobi. Somehow, Ben found us and guided us back to the farm. He told us a lot about what it was like to live out in the barren lands all alone.
In fact, it's difficult to conceive of anyone living out here voluntarily, sir.
But you know, a funny thing happened. When Ben took us back, Uncle Owen got real mad. And not at Wendy and me, but at Ben. You were bent off our farm and warned him not to come back.
Really? Oh,
what? Rebio? Anyway, Ben was looking at me kind of funny, like he wanted to say something. Uncle Owen wouldn't give him the chance.
I'm not surprised, Master Duke. Your uncle struck me as a man who could become extremely irate.
Usually, but that was the weird thing. If I didn't know him better, I'd have said he was scared right then.
But the look of these awful wastes, I suggest we locate R2 and leave at once.
R2 couldn't have gotten this far. We must have missed him in the dunes.
Well, you had just recharged him, sir. He could have made considerable distance overnight.
Uncle Owen won't take this very well.
Perhaps it would help if you told him it was all my fault, sir.
Hey, that's an idea. He needs you for the moisture harvest, 3PO. The worst he'd do is deactivate you for a few days and give you a memory flush.
Memory flush? Well, On the other hand, sir, R2 would never have run away if you hadn't removed the restraining bolt.
Wait a minute. There's something showing on the scanner dead ahead. Could be him. Hit it, 3PO. He should be right in front of us.
Look,
somewhere.
Sir, there he is, R2-D.
Great. Pull around next to him.
Right.
R2! Hey, whoa, where do you think you're going?
Master Luke is your rightful enemy now, R2. Let's have no more of this Obi-Wan Kenobi gibberish. And don't you talk to me about your secret missions either. You're fortunate that Master Luke doesn't give you back to those Jawas.
No, 3PO, it's all right. Listen, I gotta get you two back to the South Ridge to work on those evaporators before Uncle Owen checks up
if
on us.
If you don't mind me saying so, sir, I think we should first deactivate this little fugitive.
What's wrong with him now?
Oh, my. Sir, he says there are several creatures of unknown type approaching from the southwest.
Sand people. Tusken Raiders. There have been sightings all over the place. Okay, we'd better have a look. 3PO, hand me the macro binoculars.
Sir, do you think this is all really...
Come on, we'll just take a quick look. R2, you stay here. Now, watch those rocks, 3PO. Might be a little difficult.
You could say that again, Master Luke. Was not constructed with the climbing of those rock formations in mind.
I know, but from here we should be able to see whatever it was R2 detected. Hand me the macros.
Oh, here you are, sir.
Keep low. Now, let's see.
Do you see anything, sir?
Well, there are two Banthas down there, all right, but I don't see any Tusken Raiders that are... Wait, there's one. Standing guard. Hey, something's blocking me.
What? A raider! Defend yourself! What? No! Stay back! I'm not edible!
Wasn't wrong. It is Luke Skywalker. What? Well, hello there, little droid. Come here, my friend. Well, don't be afraid. Huh? Oh, don't worry. This young fellow will be all right. Luke?
What happened?
Now rest easy, son. You've had a busy morning. You're fortunate you're still in one piece. Few are lucky enough to emerge alive from a hand-to-hand contest with a Tusken Raider.
Who are... Ben?
Mm-hmm.
Ben Kenobi. Boy, am I glad to see you.
Take it slowly, son. That's quite a clout you were dealt.
What made the Sand People leave?
I imitated the hunting cry of a crate dragon. Their imaginations did the rest, and they took to their heels. Tell me, young Luke, what brings you out this far?
This little droid here. R2-D2 here claims to be the property of an Obi-Wan Kenobi. Is that a relative of yours?
Obi-Wan Kenobi. Now, there's a name I haven't heard in a long time.
I think my uncle knew him. Uncle Owen said Obi-Wan was dead.
Oh, he's not dead. At least not yet.
You know him?
Well, of course I know him. He's me.
What?
And I haven't gone by the name of Obi-Wan Kenobi since, before you were born.
Well, then this little droid does belong to you.
Don't seem to remember ever owning a I think we'd better get indoors. The Sand People are easily startled, but they'll soon be back in greater numbers. My home isn't far from here.
What is it, R2? Oh, no, 3PO.
Who's 3PO?
It's C-3PO. It's R2-D2's counterpart. When that Tusken Raider jumped us, 3PO must have been damaged.
Well, then let's find him quickly. Every second counts now.
3PO! Oh, here he is, behind the rock.
Good. Here's his arm. Torn loose, linkages and all.
Help me sit him up, Ben. I'll try his reactivate switch. Here goes. Nothing.
Try again.
Master Luke, where am I? I must have taken a bad step when that sand person swung at me with his axe thing.
Willis, can you stand? We've got to get out of here before they come back.
I don't think I can make it. You go on, Master Luke. There's no sense in your risking yourself on my account. I'm done for.
What kind of talk is that? Come on, we'll help you to your feet. The land speeder's not far off now.
Come on. Quickly now, the sand people are on the move. We'll go to my home. Come. Modest place, Luke. In comparison, your uncle's is rather grand. Sit C-3PO down over there in the corner.
Come on, C-3PO. Let me see what I can do for you.
Here's my toolbox. I don't think the damage is too serious.
Thank you, Master Luke.
His automatic disconnects released under the strain of the fall. It should be a simple matter of reattaching the shoulder linkages and activating the self-seals.
Oh, I do hope so.
Let's see. Yeah. Boy, you know a lot about droid repair for an old...
For an old hermit?
Well, I didn't mean it that way.
Oh, I quite understand. That is part of the Jedi's creed.
A Jedi? You were a Jedi Knight?
Do you find that so impossible to believe?
Well, it's just I've heard so many stories about the Jedi Knights and all the things they did.
And I suppose I don't very much look the part just now, do I? Well, truth to tell, that's partially by design. But I was one nonetheless, and so was your father.
My father?
Yes. He and I served together in the Clone Wars.
No, my father didn't fight in the wars. He was a navigator on a spice freighter.
That's what your Uncle Owen told you. He didn't hold with your father's ideals. Thought your father should have stayed here and not gotten involved.
I wish I'd known him.
He was the best star pilot in the galaxy. And a cunning warrior. And he was a good friend. I understand you've become quite a good pilot yourself. Which reminds me, I have something for you.
Sir, if you won't be needing me, I think I'll close down for a while and run through some internal checks.
Sure, 3PO, go ahead.
Your father wanted you to have this when you were old enough, but your uncle wouldn't allow it. He feared you might follow old Obi-Wan off on some foolish idealistic crusade like your father did. I wanted to give it to you once before, but your uncle ordered me to get off your farm and never return.
Right, when you saved Wendy and me. I remember that. You seem to know everything about me. Ben, you've been sort of keeping an eye on me, haven't you?
Let's simply say that I've kept abreast of your progress. But now about your father's legacy...
Well, yeah, what is this? I mean, it looks like some sort of handle. What is it attached to?
What you hold is your father's lightsaber. This is the weapon of a Jedi. Now, carefully now, press that control there on the grip.
Well, it's a sword.
A lightsaber. Its blade is pure energy. Now, take care with it. It will cut through anything it touches. Do you feel how readily it answers your least gesture? Not as clumsy or random as a blaster. But to use one well is a mark of excellence.
Gee, it moves so easily. Almost like it's alive.
An elegant weapon for a more civilized age. For over 1,000 generations, the Jedi Knights were the guardians of peace and justice in the Old Republic. Before the Dark Times. Before the Empire. Yeah, perhaps that's enough for now.
Ben?
Hmm?
How did my father die?
It's not a story to be told simply nor briefly. Suffice it to say that there was a young Jedi who was a pupil of mine, perhaps my most brilliant one, until he was seduced by the dark side of the Force and turned to evil. He betrayed your father and murdered him. His name was Darth Vader, and he helped the Empire hunt down and destroy the Jedi Knights. It's the sort of tragedy that occurs when even the finest of people are seduced by the dark side of the Force.
The Force?
The Force is what gives a Jedi his power. It's an energy field created by all living things. It surrounds us and penetrates us. It binds the galaxy together.
And this Darth Vader...
It is, as I said, a long and complicated account. It will have to wait for another time. Ah, yes, R2-D2, my unexpected emissary. Now, let's see if we can't figure out just what brought you here and where you came from. Yes. His control systems are quite conventional.
I saw part of a holographic projection, some sort of message he was carrying.
I seem to have found it.
General Kenobi, years ago you served my father in the Clone Wars. Now he begs you to help him in his struggle against the Empire. I regret that I'm unable to present my father's request to you in person, but my ship has fallen under attack, and I'm afraid that my mission to bring you to Alderaan has failed. I have placed information vital to the security of the Rebellion into the memory system of this R2 unit. My father will know how to retrieve it. You must see this droid safely to Alderaan. This is our most desperate hour. Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
Who is she?
She is the Princess Leia Organa of the Royal House of Alderaan, an Imperial Senator, and unbeknown to the Empire, a leader of the Rebel Alliance. She's grown into a remarkable young woman.
She's beautiful.
Indeed. Well, Luke, you must learn the ways of the Force if you're to come with me to Alderaan.
Alderaan? But I'm not going to Alderaan. I'm late. I'm in for it as it is.
But I need your help, Luke. She needs your help. I'm getting too old for this kind of thing.
But I can't get involved. I've got work to do. And it's not like I like the Empire. I hate it, but there's nothing I can do about it right now. And it's such a long way from here.
That's your uncle talking.
Oh, my uncle. How am I ever going to explain all this to him?
Learn about the Force, Luke.
Look, I can take you as far as Anchorhead. You can get a transport there to Mos Eisley Spaceport or wherever you're going.
You must do what you feel is right, of course.
What I feel is right? Ben, I'd like to help you, to help her. But do you think it's right to run out on Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru? They're all the family I've got, and I'm not going to let anything happen to them. And if that's not right, well, I'd rather be wrong.
Yes, of course. Sometimes even the best intentions may be contradictory. Perhaps your answer lies with the Force within you. Very well, I shall take you up on your kind offer. I must make my way to Alderaan as quickly as I can.
You all right back there, R2? How about you, 3PO?
Quite comfortable, thank you, sir.
Getting to Anchorhead with the droids would have presented a formidable problem if you hadn't offered me this ride, Luke.
I really wish I could do more for you, Ben, but the sooner I get these droids out on the South Ridge working on those evaporators, the less of a skinny I'm going to take from Uncle Owen.
Luke, I'm afraid the droids will have to come with me.
What? But they cost my uncle nearly everything.
Surely you don't think I can leave them behind. You heard that message. This matter is far too vital to risk losing R2-D2, and for security's sake, C-3PO must come along as well.
But what'll I tell my uncle?
I shall leave that to your conscience, son. What's that?
What?
There, off to the south.
Where?
Smoke. Something of great size is afire.
I don't see...
Oh, yeah, there it is. Well, you've got good eyes.
Powers of observation lie with the mind, Luke, not the eyes. Yeah, perhaps we should take a look and see what it is.
R2? 3PO? Hang on.
Yes, sir.
Jawa sandcrawler. And look, it's been shot to pieces. There's dead Jawas everywhere.
Why, those are the dreadful little creatures that captured Arthur and myself.
It must have been the Tusken Raiders. I've got a very bad feeling about this. We better get out of here.
No. Whoever did this is gone, Luke.
Sir, Arthur informs me he detects no life aboard the sandcrawler.
The poor creatures. Their lives were arduous and meager enough without being ended so brutally.
Yeah, it looks like the sand people did this all right. Look, Goffy sticks, Bantha tracks all over the place. It's just... I don't know, I never heard of them hitting anything as big as a Jawa sandcrawler before.
They didn't, but we are meant to think they did. These Bantha tracks here are side by side, you see. But sand people always ride single file to hide their numbers.
Ben... These are the same Jawas who sold 3PO and R2 to Uncle Owen.
And these blaster fire impact points on the bodies in the sandcrawler. Too accurate for sand people. Only Imperial stormtroopers are so precise.
Stormtroopers? Why would Imperial stormtroopers want to slaughter Jawas unless... The droids. The droids? And if they traced R2 and 3PO here, they may have learned who the Jawas sold them to, and that would lead them back... home.
Wait, Luke. It's too dangerous. Luke! Come back! Luke! Very well. We'll give the Jawas what decent funeral we can.
Pardon me for asking, sir, but where is Master Luke going? I mean, he will come back, won't he?
That I cannot tell you. It's tied in with a great many things to be determined now by the Force. Come, let's get this done as quickly as we can. I see him. Luke, are you all right?
The farm. I could see the smoke on the horizon. Everything was gutted, burning. I called out for Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru, but they didn't answer.
Easy, Luke. Take it easy.
There was practically nothing left of them. Ben, they were all I had. The only family I've ever known. And when they needed me, I wasn't there.
There was nothing you could have done, Luke. If you'd been there, you'd have been killed as well. And the droids would now be in the hands of the Empire.
I want to come with you to Alderaan. There's nothing for me here now. I want to learn the ways of the Force and become a Jedi like my father.
Luke Skywalker is about to undertake a journey to a distant solar system and a journey of the spirit as well. No matter that an empire is against him, he is moved by vengeance, but he is moved too by the image of a young woman in terrible danger. Luke Skywalker is soon to become a pivotal figure in the galaxy-wide struggle between rebellion and empire. Star Wars, Episode 5 by Brian Daley. Based on characters and situations created by George Lucas. Featured in the cast were Mark Hamill as Luke Skywalker, Anthony Daniels as C-3PO, and Bernard Behrens as Ben Kenobi. The series was directed by John Madden, with sound mixing and post-production by Tom Vagley. Music by John Williams. Sound design for Lucasfilm by Ben Burt. Story editor for the series was Lindsay Smith. Casting and production coordination by Mel Saar. Executive producer was Richard Toskin. Executive producer for Lucasfilm was Carol Teitelman. Star Wars was presented by National Public Radio in association with KUSC-FM Los Angeles with the cooperation of Lucasfilm Limited.